Welcome once again to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. Glad to have you with us on this Monday here in the city as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. Glad to have you here, as I said. We're going to have a couple of interesting interviews for you today. We're going to talk first with our friends out at the Jewish Community Center. The White Theater is doing the production of Lost in Yonkers, and the director and two of the actresses are with us to talk about that. Then later on in the show, we're going to talk about the 56th Annual Mayor's Prayer Breakfast, which is happening later this month as well. Lots of details to go in that, but first is first. Let's journey down to the Jewish Community Center, where the White Theater, it's a beautiful theater, is located on the campus of the Jewish Community Theater. And with us to talk all about their new show, Lost in Yonkers, is two actresses and the director. The director is Bob Stewart. I don't think I've interviewed Bob Stewart before, have I?
No, you haven't. This is the first time. Thank you.
Fill us in on you. I've seen your name around town in various things. I guess as a performer as well as a director.
Right. Yeah, actually, I'm an actor. I transplanted here from Los Angeles about 5 years ago. It was a better place to raise my kids.
Well, sure.
Yeah. It's a lot different here. And I was an actor and a director in Los Angeles. I directed all throughout California, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and various other places. And when I moved here, one of the reasons I moved here was because there was a lot of theater here. And I was very excited about moving someplace that I would still be able to do my craft and still be able to enjoy working with great people and have a wonderful experience in the community theater and semi-professional theater that they have here as well.
Yeah, people are often surprised what we have here.
There's a lot here. There's dozens and dozens of theater companies that people don't know about.
We're in the middle of flyover country, and you decided not to fly over. So best to you.
Thank you, yeah.
We're glad to have you here once again. Let's see. Laura Schwartz is with us as well.
Yes, hi.
You're an actress in the show. What have you done before that people around here have seen you in?
Well, a year ago, I was in Dancing at Lunasa at the White Theater,
uh-huh.
And that was my first experience there. And I have worked around some of the non-equity theater in Kansas City. So I've done some kids theater at the Coterie and several other places. I've been back for about 5 years, but I spent 7 years in Chicago acting. But I grew up here, so.
They either go to New York or Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they go to California, it's usually for film work, and then they come back. But you did both, I guess, Bob?
Yeah, actually, I did film work, television, and then also theater. I cut my teeth in theater, though, uh-huh. So that's really my first love. I think that theater is, it's such a pure form of the art because it changes, it morphs every night. It's in the hands of the actors once the director passes it off, and to watch it kind of metamorphosize a little bit, but it's different every night.
Oh, sure.
Which is different than if you do film, because if you do film, we do so much on the cutting room floor, so much in the editing, so much in the music that's added. So it's much more manipulated than theater is. Theater is very pure.
Anything else you want to add, Laura? You look like you wanted to add something.
Well, I was just going to add that the White Theater is beautiful. And
isn't
the
it
quality
gorgeous?
It's wonderful. However, I grew up here, so I actually did community theater at the Jewish Community Center when the campus first opened. So it's lovely to see how much it's grown and how much more support there is, so that we're not performing, I think it was in the social hall,
uh-huh.
on risers. Now there's this beautiful theater with all the technical things that we can dream of. So
well, I did a couple of shows at the Jewish Community Center when it was on Holmes on the Missouri side.
Mm-hmm.
That's how far back I know. But not as far back. Well, probably further back. I go further back than Irene Blend, our other guest. I've known Irene for probably 17 years now, Irene.
Oh, at least,
I'll always remember the show you did where you spoke Yiddish in the show.
That probably was...
I think it was one of the Fringe shows.
Oh, yes, probably so, yes.
I remember you up there speaking in Yiddish, and I thought, well...
Oh, yes, I remember that.
Even though that's in Irene's culture, that still has to be hard to do.
It is. And to do it correctly and not mess it up is a challenge, yes.
Well, thank all of you for being here. Let's talk about the show, Lost in Yonkers. Bob had some interesting comments to say about that? Maybe a little more serious than some of the other similar shows?
Yeah, obviously Neil Simon's known for a lot of great comedies, and if you look at his the Eugene trilogies with Brighton Beach Memoirs and Biloxi Blues, they're a little bit lighter than what this one is. But this won the 1991 Tony Award. It also was the Pulitzer Prize winning show. So it has a lot more character to it, I think. It takes a lot of what he learned and did with the Eugene trilogies, with the coming of age, with the boys' point of view, because there's two young high school boys. We have two very talented high school boys in this, which they are just amazing. But it builds off of that, and then it creates this interesting, we have this very dysfunctional family. And people will find those characters they can relate to, but we also see a movement of the characters. So we see these very well-defined, well-written characters, but there's a lot of comedy early on. There's also a lot of warmth, and there's a lot of dramatic points in this. So you will... I've always felt that any comedy has drama, and every drama has comedy, but when you get something with such a great balance like this, it's so well-written, that it's rare when it comes along, and I love doing shows like this.
With almost every Simon play, someone invariably says, it's patterned after his own life. They can't all be. Do you think this one is, to an extent?
I do believe, and then doing some of the research on this, that I do believe that there's a lot of roots with what he wrote in this, and when you look at some of the dramatic content, I think that the stuff that he never didn't get out in the earlier plays that he wrote. And I think this was more for him and less commercial. I think when you're early on, you have to write things that are more commercial. And I think that what the reason it won the Pulitzer Prize was because I think he would be able to take a very different perspective on this. It's set place in the 1940s, just after the United States enters World War II. And I think that's a very interesting era that this has created. And it still plays today, though, because you can still see a lot of the characters' warmth and their characterizations. They're still very, very... You see this in today's society as well. So it aged very well.
Yeah, and that had to have been a very difficult time for Jewish people with what was going on in Europe.
Absolutely, but it also keys on even an earlier time when you go back to where Irene's character, Grandma, was from Germany, which was in the pre-World War I era, and then her character actually came over to the United States approximately 30 years before this play takes place with six kids in tow. I mean, so it took a lot of guts for her to make that move, and so it shows in her character and the strength of her character, but that also becomes her Achilles heel.
You were brought into the conversation, Irene. Let's talk about your character, Grandma, in the play.
Well, she is a very stern character with a cold heart, but she wants to teach her grandchildren that she has hardly seen in the many years that they've grown up, because she is a bitter woman, I would say. But she's also very stern. She wants to teach them how to be strong, how to live in this life. You can't be weak, in her opinion. You've got to be strong. And she tries to teach this in a way that is maybe a very hard way to listen to from the children's point of view. Her grandchildren are afraid of her, and that is kind of a sad point in her life, I think, because I think truly she wants to be a warm person, but she can't. This is the way she was raised in Germany, to be strong, not to cry, and she tries to teach this to her grandchildren.
So if she's been here for 30 years, then leave before World War I, right before World War I?
I would think that, yes, because this is the beginning of the war when the play begins.
Right.
So I would say that, yes.
Yes, and at the setting of the play, the World War II years are going in. So she has probably some fears of what she remembers from what the first one happened, perhaps.
Perhaps, possibly, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and this is ingrained in her mind. And she doesn't want her family to be weak and submissive.
Yeah.
And so this is something that's very hard for her to teach.
I would imagine so.
Yes. Yeah,
but it's when it's based on someone's experiences, though, it's hard to tell them, don't be like this. These are the experiences you had, and that is what you're going by.
That is correct. That is correct. But she's a very cold-hearted person and doesn't want to show her weakness at all.
Okay, Laura Schwartz is in the show as well. Tell us about your character and how she fits in.
Sure. I play Bella, and that is the youngest child in this family. She's 35, and she, due to some illnesses at birth, she is mentally a child, but she's physically a woman. So she has all these desires to love someone, to be loved back, and mostly to have children. And so there's this big conflict there. But those desires are things she does not share with her very stern mother, that Irene plays. But it all kind of bubbles up as one of the climaxes of the show. So there's a lot of internal conflict there. But and Bella's a great character. She's super childlike. There's all kinds of interesting conflict with her mother, but then just the relationships with the siblings and then the wonderful joy of having these two nephews move in with them. I think Bella's had basically been deserted by her siblings. Everyone has left. And so Bella is there with her mother, and her mother does not show really any love. And I think Bella has this really strong spirit and is really hopeful and wants everything to be... She wants all this joy and love in her life, and she has none of it when the play starts.
Under the circumstances, that would be very difficult, wouldn't I? What does your character, Irene, want for her?
What does she want for her? I believe she wants her to stay at home so that she can take care of her. She wants to keep her away from society. She's not able to live in the society and have the dreams that she wants. She is, my character is her mother, and she is going to take care of her until the day that mother dies.
But then what's going to happen to her after that? She must prepare her in some way, I would think.
Yes, she does. Well, she doesn't do a very good job of it.
I'd rub it. And that's why we have the play, right, Mom?
Exactly. I think that she's very protective over her kids, and I think they've painted these characters very well. Because with the grandsons moving in, a lot of times in the earlier Simon plays, you'll see the coming of age for the kids. But this is actually a story that really brings in Bella and Grandma into it, because you see there's a conflict between the two of them about what's going on in their lives and what Bella wants. Even though she's like a child, she also is 35 years old. She has been, she's been building all these feelings inside, but she's been afraid to express them. And the boys have just lost their mother not that long ago, and their father went into debt to a loan shark. So he is the softer of the siblings. He's the one that cries. He's the one that the mother really looks down on. So he has to swallow his pride and bring these kids in who have not been very intimate with their grandmother at all. They haven't seen their grandmother very often at all. And in doing that, now he's bringing his sons into the same situation that he basically ran away from.
I see.
And it's contrary to their characters. But we do see, by adding these two boys into this and adding some of that love, that we see Bella's character really begin to want more and push back harder. And that's really the whole arc of the play revolves around that.
The focus is on you, then, for,
yes,
for a lot of the dialogue. Let's say, does she change without giving anything away?
No, absolutely.
Does she evolve and change as things move on?
I was going to say, I think a theme there, at least for my character, is that, and probably for Grandma too, is that to survive you have to change. And you know, whether you make that a choice or somebody sort of forces you to do that, there are different paths to that, but I think that is a key.
Change is constant. Yes. We go through that all the time, and I can't always say it's for the good, but it's supposed to happen that way. At least that's the way I look at things. And so you learn to adapt, perhaps for the good. She's protecting you. Your mother is protecting you, of course. But
absolutely,
the day is going to come when you may well be on your own. So you'll have to be able to learn those skills and survive. So I don't know that she's helping you in a long range, maybe a short range.
Right, and I think that the mama thinks that she's protecting Bella, but Bella is really just growing out of that, and I think she just gets to the point where she has to make a change because of the circumstances, because the boys are there, and really just kind of what's growing inside of her. So
is Simon telling us about Jewish family culture in the way he handles this material? No, Irene's shaking your head.
I don't think it's necessarily. I think it's broader than just the Jewish community. I think that this speaks to human nature. But there are certainly references to them being Jewish and how the war is affecting them to a certain extent. But this is very much just about human nature and the definition of the ages, of how you've got the people who have survived certain things that then want to become. If you look at the history of the Depression, or if you look at people who survived World War II, they're a lot different than people who have never experienced that. And even though we're going into World War II in this, that impact has not been harsh enough on the U.S. yet. There's not been a lot of battles. It's actually opened up for their father, who was unable to get work to pay back the loan shark. It's kind of opened up jobs that he could never have gotten before, which gives him an opportunity and a chance to pay things back. But I think it's very much more human than just Jewish-focused.
Well, of course. And were they as aware of things going on in Europe as they would be today?
With the Internet and things today, I think they weren't. I mean, they had to depend upon the radio broadcasts and things like that, the movie reels that they had at the beginning of movies and such. They didn't have the instant access that they have today. Papers were much bigger and radio. But I think that, yes, there is even comments to this, but you've got an interesting conflict because the mother was from Germany and the grandsons are like, well, we're at war with Germany. Okay, Japan. So
sure.
Oh, we're dancing around a little bit, which was a nice introduction to that.
Yeah, we're speaking with the director, Bob Stewart, and two of the actresses, Irene Blend and Laura Swartz, from the White Theater production of Lost in Yonkers. It opens on Saturday, the 11th, at February the 11th, at 7:30 p.m. Performances then continue on Sunday, the 12th, a matinee at 2 o'clock p.m. Performances then continue on Thursday, the 16th, at 7:30 p.m., Saturday the 18th at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday the 19th at 2 o'clock p.m. Never a performance on Friday evening because that is, of course, the Jewish Sabbath. But performances on these dates, performances are on the campus, the White Theater on the campus of the Jewish Community Center, which is located at 5801 West 115th Street in Overland Park, Kansas. You can see the parking garages for Sprint right when you park at the White Theater there. The number to call for more information is 913-327-8054, and the new website is thewhitetheater.org for more information. Then we're speaking with Bob, Irene, and Laura about the show. What are special challenges for the director in this? I mean, setting the mood, perhaps, for the early 1940s?
I think the mood isn't so much the challenge, but the challenge, I think, is the story. I think that being able to relate all of the harshness, all of the dramatic place that takes place here, and yet be able to infuse it with the comedy, partially it's the way that it's written, but you also have to look for opportunities to lighten the mood, because it gets very heavy at times, but then other times it is hysterically funny. So you get both the dynamics going on, and knowing how to balance that and just working with that ebb and the flow, I think, was the biggest challenge for this particular show.
Yeah, the Simon plays are usually fast-paced. Is it true with this show as well?
Not as much so. I think that it doesn't rely on the snappy dialogue, because the characters drive. This is a very character-driven show. It's not about the tempo and the pacing so much, but we want to really get into the characters. We want the audiences to be able to see people that they know in these characters, and we also want them to be able to enjoy and get on the sides with them, because they have to be able to empathize with some of these characters. Every single character in this cast is someone you can empathize with and really look at and say, wow, that's just, there's good things and there's bad things. And it's even wrapped up towards the end of the show. So there's a comment in this, but really it's about showing people, warts and all, this is who they are. And you see both the good side of them and the bad side.
Simon was good at that, I jokingly said earlier, but not really jokingly. People will say, almost every Simon play, they will say, well, this is based to a degree on something that happened to him. And even Chapter 2, you know, he was supposedly talking about one of his marriages in that show even as
right.
Well. So, you know, that's the tag he gets for every one of his shows. And so, you know, I suppose if it didn't happen to his family, or maybe a close family, something he related to. Perhaps.
I think so. And in doing the research for the show, I was able to feel that there are some things that do kind of dovetail with his history a little bit. And also, the depth of the characters are very, very so intricate that you can see that there's a personal touch there with that. And I think this is arguably one of his best works ever. I think this is the reason why it won the Tony and the Pulitzer Prize. because it is just so rich with the characterization and his wonderful text and his writing. It's just amazing, his dialogue.
Oh, sure. Now, Laura, talk a little bit about how you prepared. Do you know of any developmentally challenged people that you perhaps watched, emulated?
Before we started rehearsing, I was just sitting in a coffee shop one day, and I just heard someone speaking kind of loudly next to me, and I started listening to her, and I thought, I don't know anything about this woman. She's a stranger, but in my mind, she kind of became Bella, uh-huh. because I think, you know, Bella's fairly integrated. I mean, she's high-functioning in some ways, but then there are moments when you think, oh, this really does seem like an 8-year-old having a temper tantrum here. So I think it is really, I think that is a challenge, trying to figure out the ups and downs, you know, when she seems like she's being very logical and you might mistake her for just an average 35-year-old, and when she doesn't like something that her mom says and she stomps her feet and yells and runs out of the room and slams the door.
Yeah.
So I think that is a challenge. I also think, for me, she has the energy of a kid, right? And it's a good 20-minute play. I think having enough energy to perform it is sort of a challenge. She sort of bounds into every room, and then, you know, the next scene's another day, and she has lots of energy. So I've been working on trying to make sure I can save enough energy for the end of the play, because there's some big dramatic scenes where I really need a lot of reserves there.
I would imagine the director probably says things to you like, learn to manage your energy.
Yes, we've talked about, okay, you need to come in and you need to be bigger. And I think, yes, that is true. I need to take a nap tomorrow or something before we rehearse.
Oh, isn't it interesting how they always went bigger, but then they want to pull you back as well?
Right, it's good. It is good. And I have two small kids, so I see it all day long, and so I can identify it. But it is actually, it's very fun to be a kid when you're not. But but maintaining it is an interesting challenge. It's really fun.
Well, sure. Well, what about the biggest challenge for Irene? Irene, of course, the Irene I know is nothing like the character.
That's right. Totally.
Not at all.
That was the hardest part, because I'm such a sweet, innocent, wonderful person. I get a lot of, don't ask my close friends. But anyway, yes, it was very difficult because she is such a different personality. I do know some people that I have tried to emulate in this character. She is very cold. They're constantly telling me it's like touching steel when they never touch me. And I don't let people get too close. And to be such a cold-hearted, firm, and intolerant person it's still difficult. But.
Was that cultural to a degree, do you think, for this woman? The experiences she had, but
for the experience, her background, yes, from having a German background, which is very stern.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very regimented.
Very regimented, yes.
Yeah, when you listen to some of the classical music from the German composers, you can hear how regimented it really is.
That's right. That's right. And so that's the difficult part, but it's also a very rich part, because I've never played someone that's been that tyrannical.
Sure. Now, as I said, the show opens on the 11th, which is coming right up soon. It's a Saturday at 7:30 p.m. Performances then continue with a matinee on the 12th, which is at 2 o'clock p.m. in the afternoon. Then performances move up to Thursday the 16th at 7:30, Saturday the 18th at 7:30, and a matinee closes things out on Sunday the 19th at 2 o'clock p.m., on the White Theater. It's on the campus of the Jewish Community Center, which is located at 5801 West 115th Street in Overland Park. Oh, help me out. The name of that shopping center right near where you would turn in.
Town Center.
Yes. That's a good mark. So that's where you would turn in to go to the theater. I guess you could also get in off of...
you can go on Metcalf, too. Yeah, 117th, you can take Metcalf or Nall and just head towards the other opposite street, and you'll find it halfway in the middle on the south side.
Yeah, it's a very nice theater, as I said. I remember the first time I was offered a tour of the White Theater. And
that's amazing.
They emphasized how they could fly in scenery and furniture and all of that. I said, are you planning on doing a lot of that? Well, not right away, but you never know when we might want to. So I have to ask the question, Bob. Any flying in of any scenery for this?
Well, I thought about it, and then we just kind of nixed it. But yeah, it is. You're right. It's an amazing theater. I think that when you look at the theaters in this town, you rarely get the chance to work in one that has such a great... The support staff has been amazing there. The lighting designer and the stage management and the props people, everybody has been just great. But the theater itself, just to go in and sit, it's like any professional theater that I've ever worked in or seen. It has all of those great bells and whistles.
Oh, it is as well equipped as... probably any other theater in town, including the Rep, as far as the equipment.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we thought about flying Grandma in for a first entrance, but we figured that might send the wrong message. So,
well, they flew in Mary Poppins. Yeah. At least they got a test run with that, of course.
I was going to say, also, in Fiddler on the Roof, we had a flying angel, I guess she was.
Yeah.
And that was quite interesting. But I also want to say that on the Sunday matinees, for $15, they're going to have a kosher-style lunch available, and that'll be a great asset. You'll have that lunch, and then you'll feel like you're really in New York, and New York Yonkers, and you'll go in and watch the play.
Kind of feel, a real feel for the time and the era
that's right.
going
that's
on.
Right.
I think that's a wonderful idea. The cuisine is a little different, but people should be exposed to that. You know?
Definitely.
Oh,
yes.
Sure. You get a feel for the story, the place, the people especially, and the era they lived in and the challenges they have. When you see Lost in Yonkers at the Jewish Community Center's White Theater, the number to call for more information is 913-327-8054. The address, 5801 West 115th Street in Overland Park, Kansas. And you can see the Sprint parking garages from the parking lot of the White Theater. I didn't realize I would be that close, but I was. And the website you could go to is thewhitetheater.org to learn all about the activities of the White Theater and the Jewish Community Center as well. As was once pointed out to me during an interview, you don't have to be a Jewish person to join the Jewish Community Center.
Definitely.
That's right. Thanks so much for being with us and telling us all about your show, Lost in Yonkers, a different era, different circumstances. It gives you an idea of what people went on. And I think identifying with different ethnic groups is maybe the key to understanding things a little bit better than we do today. Thanks so much for being with us. Bob Stewart, the director.
Laura Schwartz.
Mm-hmm. Laura Schwartz. Oh.
Bella.
She plays Bella. I had it right the first time. And Irene Blend, who plays the role of the mother/grandmother in Lost in Yonkers, opening on the 11th at the Jewish Community Center's White Theater. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break. When we return, we have much more to tell you about. And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. We're going to talk now about an annual event that happens every year, and it's happening again this year, the 2017 Mayor's Prayer Breakfast, and it will happen on Tuesday, February the 21st, in the Grand Ballroom of the Kansas City Convention Center. A little early for some of you folks, 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m., but it is a breakfast. And with us to fill in all the details about it, a new friend, Rick Hughes, is with us. He is the chairperson of the 2017 Mayor's Prayer Breakfast, formerly the CEO of the Convention and Visitors Bureau for 10 years. That's quite a job, Rick. The Convention and Visitors Bureau, a lot of important things go through there.
That's why you see that I have no hair.
Well, we'll do something about that here. We know people around here. He's also been the director of the Economic Development Office former president of the Film Commission, has served as marketing and in the marketing and sales division of the Marriott Corporation for 14 years, and is currently a founding partner of Hughes Properties LLC. And that means, I know what that means, Limited Liability Corporation. Nice to have you with us here.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Served in a lot of positions around the city, so they moved you all the way up to the chairperson of the Mayor's Prayer Breakfast.
And I'm really enjoying that. Of course, I enjoyed my career, but it's really nice to be able to get out and do some volunteer work. And, of course, this organization is just outstanding. So with wonderful work that continues to keep on giving.
Yeah, I've heard about the event before. I've never had a chance to attend myself. So it'll be on February the 21st, early in the morning. It is a breakfast, but you've got some outstanding speakers lined up.
We do, and a little bit different twist this year. This is the 56th annual, so we kicked off back in the 60s. This year, in addition to the mayors who attend, there's over 30 that we'll find from the communities across the area. We've also included the chief of police, Daryl Forte. So with him joining us as the speaker, we've also included about another 16 or 17 chiefs of police from the municipalities across the area. So it should be a wonderful event.
They have a lot to talk about.
Absolutely.
The more they can cooperate and work together, the safer we are in the long run.
Yeah. Precisely.
You know, problems develop when people don't cooperate and work well together. I'm glad to see them all together.
That's right.
At least meeting each other and rubbing elbows. And hopefully, if there is any side issues, maybe those can get worked out during prayer breakfast.
Exactly. So we'll see you there.
Well, we'll try our best. We're talking to Rick Hughes, the chairperson of the event, the Mayor's Prayer Breakfast. The details on how you can attend, you can call 816-863-0992, or you can go online at kccmpb.com. For more information, and perhaps through that website, they can also perhaps reserve tickets or things like that they want to do.
Absolutely can.
As well as calling the number to do that. Tell us about the history of the organization.
Well, it's been around, this is the 56th, as we mentioned, and it was really a spawn by Mayor Roe Bartle, who happened to attend the 1953 National Prayer Breakfast, which was the first one that was held in the country. Dwight Eisenhower, President Eisenhower, spoke at that event, and it was his vision to come back and say, what can we do in Kansas City to replicate something like that? So it's a little bit of a knockoff, if you will, of the National Breakfast, which just happened last week, as you know.
Sure, yeah.
So some of the highlights, founded by Claire Schneider, Schrader, who was a banker, formerly UMB, beginnings of that. It's really the first in the nation to include all faiths that we have. So it's not a single denomination, and it does not include on the committee any elected officials. So we kind of keep ourselves as raw citizens, if you will. A couple other little things: the cardinal organizing principle was not to do any kind of evangelistic approach, so no proselytizing or trying to convert people to a particular thing. So it's really worked well, we think, for the last 56 years, and we hope it'll continue for the future.
Can we talk about some of the different religious leaders that will be here? A nice mix that gets, I think that's a nice idea to have different religions.
Yes, and so we really don't even recognize the faiths, if you will.
Oh,
so that nobody's really designated by denomination. But we really enjoyed some pretty interesting speakers over the years. Just a few to mention. It kicked off with the Honorable Albert A. Ridge, who was the judge over at the 8th District Court of Appeals back in the 60s. We've had Whitney Young, who was the Junior League president, Jesse Owens, if you recall, the Olympic champion.
Oh, yeah.
And then a lot of local leadership, R. Crosby Kemper Jr., who recently passed, and J.E. Dunn, a senior, Buck O'Neill, Carl DeCapo, and Joanne Collins, who happened to be... speakers of the past, but serve presently on our committee.
And I've met Mrs. Collins.
Yes.
Mr. DiCapo, I remember eating in his restaurant, the Italian Gardens, downtown. I remember my own personal memories now. I remember I was sitting in there one time with a friend, and in walks Jack Stedman, quite a tall man, you know.
I think he was quite a frequent enjoyer of the pasta at Coral's Place.
Oh, yes. Certainly seemed to be. And for those of you not old enough to remember the old Chiefs regime, Jack Stedman was Carl Peterson on steroids.
That's right.
Yeah, quite the presence.
Yes, he was. I believe he was one of the first employees that was brought along by Mr. Hunt.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And it was quite exciting to meet him, the Chiefs being an institution in Kansas City for a long time. So you have a lot of important people involved here. The civic community supports it. Are there charities involved with all of this?
Yes, and that is really one of the major focuses. This year, the beneficiary will be Gildas Kansas City. You may be familiar with Gildas, just down the street a little bit here. They have been a cancer support group and providing incredible services. You know, there'll be some, I think, 9,000 Kansas Cityans diagnosed with cancer this year, and a lot of them don't know where to turn, and Gildas is a good spot to find. And we're really, really pleased to be supporting that crew over there. They do wonderful work.
Yeah, that's Gilda Radner?
Uh-huh. Gilda Radner was the founder. She herself had a problem with cancer and discovered that it's kind of a lonely spot when there's really no support around. So they're all over the country now, and this happens to be the Kansas City iteration. We're happy they're here.
Oh, it is a lonely spot to be in. But I must give the woman credit. She talked about it even on the program Saturday Night Live. She talked about it with such a sense of humor.
Yes.
I remember her, and I believe it was Jane Curtin, had a comic skit, and it was a comic skit, as hard as this was to believe, where they talked about Gilda's cancer.
Yeah, she was quite the lady and quite humorous.
Yeah. But there's branches all over the country, including here in Kansas City.
Yes.
Do you know how many people they would serve in a particular year?
I know that in the last 5 years, they just celebrated their 5 years, they have doubled the numbers that they've served. I want to say it's close to 500 this year, and I could be off.
Which is a goodly number.
Yeah, which is quite the leverage for the small group that they have. So wonderful work over there.
And if someone is interested in being a part of this, for a family member, for you yourself, if you're suffering from that, who would they contact? How would they get involved?
They would contact directly Gildas, and it's kind of a family affair over there. They have a lot of different membership activities, so I will get this their website information. But importantly, they will be receiving some of the funds that we earn at the breakfast will be heading over their direction. So we hope it continues to do good work there.
I hope it does. It sounds like a very worthwhile cause, among probably other worthwhile causes that you've supported over the years as well.
There's been quite a few in there, from Boy Scouts to last year to the Faith and Fellowship group. It's been an interesting tour.
Well, you mentioned Roe Bartle earlier. He was very involved with the Boy Scouts.
Yes, he was. Absolutely.
His statue was not too far from here.
That's right, and a nice camp facility with his name on it, just south of here, I believe.
Yeah, they had it. His nickname was the Chief, and it is said that that's the reason that the Chiefs are called the Chiefs, because Roe Bartle was called the Chief.
I believe that's correct.
Yep. That's the story I've heard.
I've heard that as well.
But it goes back 56 years, and because of an event he attended in Washington, D.C.,
that's right.
The National Prayer Breakfast, which they just, as you mentioned, just did have last week. But he decided that he wanted to have one here. And I'm sure over the years it's been very well attended and supported a lot of fine charities.
It absolutely has. We've run in excess of 1,000 people at the breakfast. I think we'll expect somewhere near 800 this year. So there's still plenty of time over the next few weeks to get signed up.
Yeah,
individually or even sponsorships.
Do all the mayors get a chance to speak? Well, probably not. It would be hard to probably get those politicians to tone it down.
Yeah, we'd probably have to start this week.
But the mayor of Kansas City will speak, of course.
Mayor James will, yes, because it's in his backyard. We look forward to the Mayor James welcoming the entire group.
Now, rumor has it, at least I was told yesterday, for the first time that Mayor James actually had a musical group of his own in his younger days.
Back in the day, yes. I think he was an opening act for Jefferson Starship or whatever they were referred to at the...
Really?
Yes, I think that's the rumor.
At the Cowtown Ballroom, perhaps?
I believe that could be correct, yes.
I believe that's where Jefferson Starship...
Airplane
first and then Starship later. I believe that's where they played. So the mayor has experience, so we expect to see him... I'm just kidding. At one of the KKFI fundraising concerts one day.
He should... Now, he will not be performing at the Pro Breakfast, but... We really look forward to his welcoming comments.
Secretly, you know, he may like to do so. You
that's
never
right.
know.
That's right. Maybe that could be a new twist next year, so.
Oh, sure. Sounds like that would be a lot of fun. Chief Daryl Forte is going to speak as well.
Yes.
He has a lot he can talk about. You know, it's been a rough year for Kansas City, and I'm sure he has some things to say. I know he's a big advocate of community policing.
No question about it. And as you know, he's been around, a native of Kansas City, schooled here, and he's got a wonderful message, and I think a message that will be shared and should be acknowledged across the country.
Having all of those leaders in one room, albeit for only a couple of hours, do important matters get talked about and taken care of at those times?
Well, you know, we, by charter, have really eliminated any kind of political discussion.
Oh.
We are specifically apolitical, and so you won't hear any contextual things with policies or politicians or any narrative there. In fact, the real focus is on the speaker, in this case Daryl Forte, and his background and what his, not only his past and his history and his career, but you know how his faith life paralleled what he's done and what he's accomplished in his wonderful career. So we're going to be focusing on him and his message.
Yeah, it's quite a job, you know, the chief of a large city like Kansas City.
It is. It's thankless in some respects because it's never, you know, there's always a finger or blame heading that direction, and I don't think a lot of us really realize what our boys in blue have to contend with on a daily basis.
There's always challenges, and the challenges change.
Yes, they do.
7 to 10 years ago, the issues were a lot different than what the issues are today.
That's right.
Since he's been with the department for such a long time, not always as chief, but in other positions working his way up.
I think he's held every position in the police department in terms of rank. Yes.
Yeah, I'll bet he has. So he will be the chief speaker. Who else besides him and the mayor will we get to hear from?
In addition to Daryl Forte's message and the mayor's greetings, we're really pleased this year to have Kathy Quinn from Channel 4.
Oh, you're very
emceeing.
Lucky. You're very lucky.
Yes, we are.
She's very good at that.
Yes, yeah, indeed. In fact, she's done it several years, so if she's there on that morning, we'll know that there's no major breaking news that's happening around Kansas City then. So.
We'll hope not.
That's right.
We'll hope not. Yeah, outstanding speaker. Goes way back in Kansas City. She's worked for WHB for originally American Cablevision. I hope she doesn't mind my saying that. Back in the 80s, she was part of a show on American Cablevision when I was working there as well. And she had a show then, too. Kind of worked her way up, became a... would you like me to say an institution here in town?
Indeed.
And very good with the St. Patrick's Day Parade, and I hope she doesn't mind my saying her mother being Latino and her father being Irish. She kind of walks in both worlds.
That's it. I think there's an elder connection there, too.
Well, her husband is with the group, the elders, yeah. Very outstanding speaker and a very nice lady as well. You're lucky to have her.
Yes, thank you.
That's a great job. What else would you like to talk about, Rick?
I think we've really kind of covered most of it.
Okay.
I think we could maybe reinforce the fact that it is on Tuesday, February 21, at the Grand Ballroom, which we've really enjoyed that spot in the convention center for a number of years now. And, you know, there's still an opportunity to either find sponsorship or sponsor a table table sponsor or to even purchase individual tickets.
Is that the way it works? So people would buy their business, for instance, would buy a block at a table?
That's right. And we're very fortunate. We could not really do this without the 25 or so sponsors that we do have from across the community. So it's been a really nice outpouring. They continue to work with us from year to year. So we are very thankful for their generosity.
And that is, of course, coming up on February the 21st at the Grand Ballroom of the Kansas City Convention Center. It starts at 7:30 a.m., so you can have your breakfast with Rick and the dignitaries and be out of there just in time to get to the office probably at 9 o'clock a.m. as well. The number to call, once again, for more information is 816-863-0992 or online at kccmpb.com. That's where you go to get your information about the 56th annual Mayor's Prayer Breakfast happening on February the 21st. Rick's just a wealth of experience and information. As I said earlier, he was the CEO of the Convention and Visitors Bureau for 10 years. Is there a lot of... Do you help, I should say, help bring conventions to Kansas City? That's always, you hear the mayor talking about it all the time. We would like to get this organization to come or that organization to come. And I know a lot goes into that. I guess hotel space being one of the important factors.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think that they just show up. But, you know, those things are, especially the major conventions are booked 10 plus years out. And we've really been fortunate that the mayor himself has been very cooperative and is a strong pitch person for Kansas City. It's a great spot for visitors all the way around.
Oh, yeah. I hope anyone doesn't think we're getting into anything controversial, and I don't mean to, but people argue all the time, do we need another big hotel downtown? What do you think about that?
Well, I've tried not to make comments on that,
okay.
You know, beginning about 8 years ago, we were really pushing for that. So, yes, it's much, much needed, especially with the competition, and I know Ronnie Burt, the current CEO, would probably echo those comments.
Uh-huh. Well, you hear that said all the time, Kansas City does not have enough downtown hotel rooms. I guess the idea of busing people from different hotels around the community, they would rather them be in one location?
Well, when you get into the busing business, that's just another expense. It's another potential liability. It's another piece of logistics that has to be coordinated. And so when planners find cities where that's not required, then that takes a bit of a burden off of them. It's just another aspect that they don't need to tend to.
Yeah.
And when you can get them closely committed downtown, then it's also less contracting that you're doing with all the hotels.
When the All-Star Game was here a few years ago, there was talked about all the economic impact that had for the area for that one game. And I assume when the World Series has been here twice in the last few years. That probably has an even larger economic impact.
Well, and all of us citizens should really relish in the fact that we have people coming in here spending their money, and then they leave and their money stays behind. So it's I consider it like the purest form of economic development.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And you were right in the heart of it. You were also part of the Film Commission. I remember interviewing Jerry Fogle a number of years ago when he had that same position, I guess.
Yes.
And he talked about the difficulties in getting productions to come here.
Yes. Well, some of that, it's so competitive. We've lost a lot through the bidding aspect to Canada, who has a lot of incentives, and of course those are beginning to creep into the national approach here, so it's very, very competitive. But we're well suited because of our topography, and if you swipe 150 span around here, you can see, you know, you got hills and Flint Hills and rivers, and it's a wonderful spot for film.
Oh, yeah. Well, you hear the folks in California talking about losing business to Canada, and I guess recently there was a spot running sponsored by whom I don't remember. So there were actually more productions done in New Orleans than there was in California. That seems surprising, but maybe not so.
A lot of history there. And I think when you look at the architecture of New Orleans, and you can find anything from modern to 200 years look if you need it in your film.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you've been pretty busy during your career. So semi-retired now.
Yes. Yep. And happy.
And happy.
Yep. Happily semi-retired. So I still keep in touch a little bit. But now with number 7 grandchild,
oh, really?
Just arrived a couple of weeks ago, I've kind of my interest has moved on to other things. I think sometimes more important things.
Oh,
life.
Sure.
Yep.
Yeah. All these civic positions are difficult. They're important, but they're also difficult because you have to talk to a lot of people and make a lot of people agree with each other about certain things, and that always is a task that is very daunting sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is, getting someone to line up.
That's right.
I think that's really the definition of leadership, the capacity to get people lined up on the same page.
Is it more persuasion? Is it more gentle persuasion? Offer incentives?
Well, I think, Eisenhower said it best, it's like putting a string on the table. You can push that string or you can pull it.
Oh.
And I think if you're pulling in the right direction, then you get every alignment that you need and cooperation.
Oh, sure. Well, President Eisenhower could do both of those things.
And President Eisenhower, as we said, was the early speaker, and his granddaughter spoke at our prayer breakfast a few years ago.
Yeah. Well, let's go back. That's the reason Rick is here. We're talking about the 56th Annual Mayor's Prayer Breakfast. It will be happening on Tuesday, February the 21st, in the Grand Ballroom of the Kansas City Convention Center. The number to call for more information is 816-863-0992 or online at kccmpb.com, and you'll hear Mayor James. I guess the feature speaker is Police Chief Gerald Forte. Master of Events would be Kathy Quinn from Channel 4. And I don't know, do we get to hear from Rick Hughes at the ceremony as well?
Only just the introductory remarks, thankfully. And we should also, we'll make this promise, you will be out of there promptly at 9 o'clock.
Oh,
we hold ourselves to that. So.
These business people are such people, aren't they?
That's right. That's right. Get them on to the next thing.
Yeah, nice to have you here with us today. I should mention the chief charity will be Gildas Charity.
Gildas, Kansas City, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the money will stay locally, I'm guessing.
Absolutely will,
yeah.
As it always has.
So. Sounds wonderful.
Yeah, nice to be with you, Michael.
Rick Hughes, chairperson of the 2017 Mayor's Prayer Breakfast, happening on Tuesday, February the 21st, in the Grand Ballroom of the Kansas City Convention Center. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good to be with you.
The Jazz Insider is next. There'll be great jazz this afternoon. There'll be jazz from 1 to 3. Then we'll have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. Until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next time.